Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutan.
Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. A recently released prisoner is trying to bring attention to the conditions and abuse that happens at prisons through a petition signed by him and 41 prisoners. They claim prisoners are deprived of adequate food, water, exercise, and proper sanitation systems. Now, these issues have long plagued the Malaysian prisons, but do we fully understand the consequences of poor governance in prisons and other places of detention? Joining us on the show tonight, we have Azura Nasron. She is the Right to Trial Coordinator at Suara Rakyat Malaysia, or Suaram. Suaram recently published a report on proposed reforms to prisons and all places of detention, with lessons from the COVID-19 public health crisis. Azura, the prisoners' claim of, you know, inhumane prison conditions, I'm just wondering whether those were consistent with what Suaram learned when putting together this report.
Unfortunately, yes. Because basically on the report itself, on the method that we published the report, we actually did interviews with prisoners from lockups, and also migrants that have experience. But then we can't get any interviews with migrants that in immigration centers, because it's very, you know, basically you can't get them to talk because you can't talk to them, right? It's either them being deported or they are in there. So we only get experience from prisons and lockups, and most of it is the same as what being published in FMTs or any other part, where most of them during the COVID time, they have to stay in the cell for 22 to 23 hours. They cannot do anything outside. They eat there, they sleep there, they even, some have their toilets in there, right? And some of them even told us that they have cases where the prisoners want, they were trying to suicide because they're feeling very depressed with the situations in there. And of course, with some of the prisoners that we managed to interview, they were part of the prison where they still use the bucket system. You know, that is exactly what really happened. One of them, they had to clean up their bucket every day by themselves. And imagine that you have to eat in the in the place where the bucket is in the prison itself. So I think that's a very,
yeah. Azura, could you help us understand whether there are different types of prisons in Malaysia? Because I understand from the media reports that the bucket system is used in what they call old and heritage prisons, some in Penang, Taiping, and Muar. Yeah. It might not apply to all the prisons in the country. Do you have a sense of the different types of prisons and how conditions might vary across them?
Yeah, I would say most of the conditions are very. It's actually, you know, when I look at the interviews, I think it really depends on the department itself. You know, I can see that from Department of Kajang, you know, they are doing some initiatives and collaborating with NGOs on how to help overcrowding issues and things like that. So I think the government have a general one, but it depends on the department of the prison itself. And of course, as you said, there's few departments where still they are using this old system. They're not changing. Well, Suhakam said they are changing it, but I don't know when they are changing it, because this is another thing that we should talk about. Where is the funds are used for the changing of this amenities, right, in the prison itself, yeah.
Well, one of the things the Suaram report highlighted was the lack of funding and the consequences of that. Where is the concern? Is it the funding, the lack of funding that's coming from federal government, or is it in the way the funding is being utilised? Is there proper governance and oversight as to how those monies are being spent?
I think it's both. Because if you look at the information gave by the prison department, they would always say that funding is not enough. We have so much people in here, and then we have to pay, because the funding that the government is giving, it has to pay for everything, right? For the electrics, for the salary. It's not just about for the inmates. It's for everything, right? So the prison department will always say there's not enough funding. But then, that's our question again. how transparency is the information that when you say that you don't have enough funding, you know, because we also listen to, you know, when prisoners say the food is not exactly what the prison department are saying, you know, and there's so much corruption issues inside the prison itself. So how do we talk about this? So I think it comes with both. If prison want more funding, you have to bring out the information first so that we know what's not enough for you. And we can actually give you proper funding that is not just merely funding for you to operate the prisons, but how for you to operate in more human ways, you know, on how do we get up from the situation itself, you know, yeah.
Azura, you know, when I guess there are some global benchmarks for prisons and prison standards. How do we rate Malaysian prisons against global standards?
Okay. You know, whenever we talk about global standards, I always agree with, we always see countries like Norway, Sweden, Germany on how they do their prisons, right? But of course, we can't compare because they have a very low population, you know. But there's always some things that we can learn, especially one thing that I really like on how they don't have what do we call, I forgot the word. They don't take, I forgot the term, but yeah, they have very good restorative justice on where every inmate, they don't treat inmates like criminals that you don't have any future, you know. And then one thing that they always say that even their wardens have to undergo a very long classes, you know, courses, and then they don't treat the criminals like they don't have future. So they were saying that the wardens are not just someone to guide them, but also they are like coach, you know, they are coach, they are motivator, they are role model for the inmates. So I think this is something that I really like on how Norway treat their prisoners itself. Yeah.
Well, on that note, Azura, and you mentioned that perhaps, you know, some prisons are more receptive or have better governance than others. What have you learned, particularly in putting together this report, about the types of people that run prisons, about how they think about governance of prisons? Is there empathy towards the people, you know, the prisoners that they have to supervise? Is there any kind of, or is there inertia in the way that they're thinking about this, just clocking in and clocking out? What have you observed?
Do you mean in Malaysian context?
Yes, in the prisons that you observed to put together this report.
I think in Malaysia, there's one thing where we always see that this kind of group of people, they are so bad, they are criminals, they have no future. And then we treat them very badly as if, yeah, we just treat them very badly. And then, yeah, I think, wait, I'm sorry, I don't
know. Yeah, I just want to add to that. I think the question is whether we take an attitude that people can be rehabilitated, right? And so when we talk about the criminal justice system, we talk about the difference between punishment and rehabilitation. And I think, Azura, you're pointing to in that direction, that there are prison systems that recognize that people can and must be led so that towards a better outcomes once they get out of prison. And one of the things that has always been a problem for many people coming out of the prison system is that they are stigmatized. They're stigmatized as, you know, former inmates. They might be discriminated against in terms of work. And therefore, the cycle continues, right? You go back to crime because the options and opportunities are now closed off to you. In your report, do you spell out what you think are the consequences of poor governance? Are there recommendations that you make about commitment to transparency, a human rights approach, an establishment of a multi-stakeholder cooperation? There are many kind of concrete recommendations. What do you see likely happening in Malaysia, or is there no political will to change?
Yeah, okay. I think there's one thing about Malaysia is that we have to shift our focus on applying this restorative justice. I think in Malaysia, we always focus on, you know, what do we call hukum orang? Yeah?
Yeah, to punish, yes.
Yeah, we only focus on punish, but we don't focus on how to emphasize on normalization or reintegration of these people back to the society itself. That's one thing. But, you know, before talking about in prison itself, what we can do in prison, but I think we also have to talk about before then going into prison itself. You know, looking at these people, most of them are coming from B40 class, and why are they doing these kind of things? Is it because they are stuck in a space that they cannot grow that much? You know, that they have to end up in a criminal position. And then you know that most of the people in the prisons now are doing drugs. And why are people are doing drugs? I think this is the thing that we have to question first, rather than talking about, you know, how to integrate them in the society itself. Because if you don't talk about how they are going to prison, and then we just keep putting people in, you know, and right. That's one thing. And then, of course, about how do police actually do interviews with people, you know, or do interviews with criminals. I think this is another thing that we should talk about, not just about society, society issues, criminals and things like that, but also how do police catch this kind of people, you know, because in Suwarem itself, we receive a lot of cases that some of them, you know, is it they are just like what do you call it kesan kepada isu ini. They are not even, they don't want to be part of this, you know, but they're just stuck in this circle of things. And then how do police do the investigation and catch these criminals? I think this is a thing that we also have to look at. Yeah.
Okay, so the report really does take, you know, into consideration the entire ecosystem of the criminal justice system. Azura, thank you so much for joining us on the show today. We really appreciate your time, and we hope to speak to you again soon. That was Suwarem activist Azura Nasron. We're going to take a quick break here and consider this. We will be back with more. Stay tuned. Hi, thanks so much for staying with Sharad and I on Consider This. We're discussing the long overdue reforms needed in prisons and places of detention and the consequences of the poor governance of these places. Joining us on the show, we have Adrian Pereira, Executive Director at North-South Initiative, a migrant and refugee rights NGO. Adrian, we were just talking to Azura Nasron from Suwarem, and Suwarem had put out this report on reforming prisons and all places of detention. Can you begin very quickly by sharing what your role was? What was North-South Initiative's role in this report, particularly with the detention centres, and what was it that you contributed to this report?
Yeah, so good evening. The North-South Initiative is a social justice-based organization that works closely with the migrant communities. So when I mention migrants, it includes the refugees, migrant workers, stateless, and the various categories that they fall under. So during the pandemic and even till now, we have been monitoring and working with the migrant leaders regarding cases of detention and arrest, and following up with them on the different types of abuses, access to justice, and safe repatriation. So some of that data was contributed to the report. And of course, it is when it comes to data, it's a challenge because not many migrants would want to share the stories of abuses, especially after what happened to Raihan Kabeh on Al Jazeera in 2020.
Adrian, could you help us clarify what the distinction is between prisons and places of detention, and whether places of detention, you mentioned, these holding camps for undocumented workers and such, do they include also places of detention like Pusat Serenti, where, you know, people who are going through some form of drug rehabilitation are also held? Is there a kind of formal definition that helps us understand these distinctions?
Yeah, so the immigration detention centers are mainly for non-citizens, and they are normally put there after they have undergone a sentence in jail, And these places are the temporary holding places that prepare them for deportation and repatriation. So they are very unique in terms of categorization. And your question is important because in the penal code, immigration detention centers are not listed in the categories that require an inquest when a death in custody happens. So I think probably the lawmakers didn't see the significance of non-citizens when they reform laws, and it doesn't have the protection that is needed. And this is one of the main advocacy points we are working on.
When you look at the different types of detention centres around the country, are there differences in the way they are run, in the amenities or facilities or funding that they may receive? What are the differences that you see?
So they are immigration detention centres, and there's also temporary immigration detention centres, which are more have a very minimal support service and logistics. So we find that the abusers there are much higher. So conditions are harsher. Cleanliness is quite bad. And I remember the report from the Indonesian workers who were in the Sabah immigration temporary detention centers had a certain type of skin disease, which we have not seen in the regular detention centers. So you can see there's a kind of difference in terms of the conditions. In fact, the recent escape of detainees from the detention center in the north was also one of the temporary detention centers.
Yeah, Adrian, you point to a very interesting dimension to the poor governance in many of our prisons and detention centers, which is disease, right? And disease, we've heard of, tuberculosis on the rise in prisons in Malaysia and so forth. But before I get to that, I want to come back to the distinction, because I mentioned Pusat Seniti. There are also these Pusat Pemulihan Akhlak. There are all kinds of institutions that have been created to hold people involuntarily. So do you cover those things? I mean, are you as concerned about the Pusat Seniti and the Pusat Pemulihan Akhlak of Malaysia?
I mean, as a Malaysian, of course, I'm concerned. But compared to the non-citizen who has much less opportunities and access to justice, so the focus of North-South Initiative has been on non-citizens. But currently, and surprisingly, Malaysians have also approached us when it comes to the issue of detention. And one example is we recently received a case of a Malaysian who's stuck in a detention center in Nepal. So it's only a matter of time before these stories of Malaysians struggling in detention centers come to the public's information. Yeah.
So when we spoke to Swaram a little bit earlier, they pointed to long-standing issues within prisons, right? So overcrowding, a lack of adequate food and water, and the sanitation system really archaic. What have you found with detention centres, places of detention? When we think about immigration detention centres, are the issues the same, and what are the reforms that are specific to detention centres that you are hoping to see?
So among the different complaints that we have received from the non-citizen community is these centres are quite dirty. They have very poor sanitation and cleaning services. Of course, migrants have never asked for five-star treatment, but the types of diseases that we have found and have been reported show that these places are managed in a very bad manner. In fact, some of the deaths in custodies that we were following hinted that the migrant community is a bit more vulnerable because they don't have access to justice once they are placed in these immigration detention centers or even the police lockups and prisons. So there's a very significant difference in terms of treatment and human rights abuses faced by a non-citizen as compared to Malaysian. And the fact that the migrants do not have access to the national illegal aid program itself is highly problematic and puts them at very high risk.
Adrian, broadly speaking, are all people held in these centers considered criminal? Whatever the nature of the crime, whatever the circumstances, especially for migrants, right, who might have been cheated and by agents and so on and so forth, where there isn't really, they didn't necessarily engage in fraud, but are they treated as if they're criminals?
Yeah, Sharad, that's a brilliant question and something that we have been trying to share or do the labor and legal reforms regarding the topic, because when a migrant is seen to have committed a crime, of course, they go through the general criminal justice system. And the immigration-related laws allows the government to deport them after going through their sentence. So having them have to go to a detention center is almost like being punished twice. And it's not just a normal punishment, it's a very harsh and brutal punishment, which the government thinks that, you know, it will be as a deterrent. But in reality, and many NGOs working on migrant rights will say that 90% or more of the migrants in the immigration detention centers are actually victims of human trafficking. And there's so many anecdotal evidences pointing at that.
So they are victims, but Adrian, is there anyone that benefits from this mass immigration detention?
Yeah, so that's a loaded question. And I think it's pretty clear that the cost involved of running these centers are extremely huge. An expert estimated that it's around 100 million ringgit per year. And I'm pretty sure, looking at the way Malaysia is governed, many different actors would want a piece of the pie. So there's logistics involved, there's food involved, food services, there's cleaning services. So it's not surprising that despite having no real impact in society, that there are many actors who want these detentions of non-citizens to continue. And as usual, every time, like in other parts of the world, there's a political contest or election, immigration detentions and foreign workers issues are used to help politicians gain their political mileage.
Adrian, seeing how, you know, there is a system that potentially it's corrupt or open to abuse of the sort, what are the prospects for reform? I mean, if too many stakeholders are gaining from this, are you pessimistic that we will get the reform that is needed?
Yeah, so the whole migration cycle is a multi-billion dollar business, from the trafficking, the labor hiring, to placements, to logistics, to deportation and detentions. There's so much money involved. Looking at the trend of how the government has been addressing reforms, which is very slow, I doubt it's going to happen anytime soon. But thanks to certain actors like the All-Party Parliamentary Group on Prisons and Detention Center Reforms, there are certain important people who are pushing the agenda for reforms. And in principle, you know, like we discussed earlier, the people in these migrant or immigration detention centers are not criminals. They are victims of human trafficking. They are victims of cheating by different actors. Why do we think that putting them in these centers are going to bring reforms? It's not happening. And in fact, we are looking at alternatives of detention where, you know, you can have a community-based holding center where the non-citizens are placed and taken care of by the society. So we can shift away from these immigration detention centers and over a period of time completely abolish them, because they're proven to be of no use.
That was Adrian Pereira from the North South Initiative wrapping up this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutan, signing off for the evening.
Thank you so much for watching, and good night.